what, no matter who's doing the speaking and what programs are being developed, more women come than men. This is factual. The reason why more women come than men is because we have the capacity to look for godliness even in a world that looks like the world looks now, which is a horrible, horrible world. This ability to want to be affected by godliness, which is what Emunah is about, is something that we have to draw ourselves into greater contact with. Okay, the main means of doing this is tefillah. Tefillah works with Emunah the way learning works with Emes. Okay, the halachas of tefillah, as you know, are learned from Chana. Okay, what tefillah is supposed to be is basically a way of expressing one's dependence and unity with Hashem. Okay, the four major parts of tefillah, the early morning brachot, which speak about your body and your bodily functions and everything surrounding you as being from Hashem, is one part. But that's supposed to take you to the next part, the Psukei Dezimra, which isn't talking about you. You're not the main topic of Psukei Dezimra. What's the main topic there? Nature. And then you go after that to the Shema that talks, and the brachas of the Shema that talk about Hashem's transcendence, and only then Shemona Esrei. Women are very strong in tefillah. And this is something that should be developed. The reason why in learning that women learn Tanakh, Musar, the philosophic works, in some places Chassidus, has to do with this, that this is what women are drawn to and that this is what feeds Emunah. This is food. Okay, today we can't get this from the outer environment. It has to come from books. But this is why these are the subjects that we're learning. When one studies Gemara, or Mishnah for that matter, and you're faced with the question, may emasai karin shma shel arvis, the answer is going to be, this is the time. What time do you say the Shema? This time. How do you know? These are the proofs. The question isn't, why do you say the Shema? What is the Shema supposed to tell you? How is it supposed to move you? Because those are not the questions that the texts are addressing. When Rambam says that women don't address these texts correctly, they address it with a lack of dot, it's true, because those are not the questions that most women view as primary. Feminizing the text is not an answer to finding what one needs in learning. There are enough texts that don't have to be rewritten for women's needs. Rabbi Breidowitz was saying that men need more of this. This is completely possible. I don't know. But what I would say is that the reason why men traditionally haven't done this, there's a reason for it. It isn't because you just can't get someone to teach these subjects in a yeshiva because they're all teaching in Beis Yaakov. It's flattering to think that, but that's not the truth. The reason is that men really do find who they are not through Emunah as much as through Emes, through seeing the different pieces of the puzzle fit together. And this is why when you see a highly developed man and you see a highly developed woman, you see two sides of the same thing. What you see in the end is somebody who either came to this sense of Elokus through taking all of the pieces of the puzzle and finally getting a picture, or someone who had the picture and then put the pieces in. But you see very, very much two sides of one whole when you look at highly developed people. A problem that I see is that women don't study the lives of the women in Tanakh or of other women role models sufficiently. I think that further study of those role models would give people greater insight into the value of Tznius, the value of Bina, and ultimately the sense of how Elokus is felt in the heart of a woman. That's what I wanted to say.
Somebody moderator, or do we just...
Yes. Oh, it's on. Is this on?
I'm sorry. My name is... Sorry to interrupt you before you begin. We just have to limit questions to 15 minutes because of the lateness of the hour. and
oh, that's terrible.
Please bear with us. Thank you.
All right. We'll try to give short answers. You try to keep the questions phrased short. Okay.
Okay. I want to make one comment about the GET situation. As a person who has been working in the GET organization for 10 years and has been through a lot of very gory, heart-rending situations, I have a lot of feeling that the community really doesn't support the issue. I don't think the Rabbanim support the issue in terms of social pressure. I don't think that the Bate Din support the issue sufficiently to work through the problems. It's been really our experience in the GET organization. And I think in a certain way, to blame it on the Golos Society, if you'll excuse me, Rabbi Breidowitz, is a bit of a cop-out. I think we really have to take more responsibility for this. You can't imagine the hundreds of thousands and thousands of women that are in pain because of this issue. In terms of the young women here who are in the outside communities, there are prenuptial agreements available through the GET organization. And if anybody wants, and we, if you have people who have problems obtaining GITIN, please suggest them to our organization, because we've been successful in many instances where other situations haven't been successful. I have the number upstairs. I'll be glad to give it to you. I wanted to make one comment about tefillah, Rebbetzin. It seems to me that there's a sort of a dialectic tension between the young women that have five children under five and have making some attempt at tefillah. And in my work with women, I see that that gives them pause and they have a tremendous difficulty. Now, those who work it out sometimes will say Tehillim or do other kinds of mm-hmm. things to sort of, as one woman said, keep her foot in the door until she can really daven in an appropriate way.
Okay, what I would say to that is, this is halacha, this isn't my chiddush, is that a little with kavana is desirable much more than more without kavana. While according to the Pesach and Mishneh Berurah, women should daven formal tefillah twice a day, if for whatever reason in your life this isn't what's happening, if you can call to Hashem in emes, even if what you're just saying is Ribono Shel Olam, help me, that's a tremendous, tremendous statement, because it takes you away from thinking you're the one who's going to help you or that somebody else is going to be the one who helps you.
I could just add that Rebbetzin mentioned the Mishneh Berurah's Pesach. The Chafetz Chaim's son records in his own biography that when his mother was raising children, she did not daven full Shemone Esrei every day. The Chafetz Chaim paskin that since she's involved in the mitzvah of taking care of her children, she's exempt from the obligation of formal tefillah, and she would simply say a paragraph or something for davening.
I have a few questions. The first thing is, if you could address why, ideally, a man is allowed to have two wives originally. That's number one. And number two, it seems like a double standard that Hashem set up, even though you explained it, if you could elaborate more, why only a man could give a get and not a woman. Not about the society, but why did Hashem set it up that way? Because it seems it's not a good answer. I don't think it would convince the people if I was trying to convince them. The other question is, if sexuality is so beautiful, why, I've been asked this question, did Moshe Rabbeinu separate? Right, and number also, whenever you describe, when I talk about mikveh and I put the period in a negative light, people really get upset. I once called it, I said it used to be called a curse, and the whole audience went wild, you know, to try to show that it's...
Well, you got their attention, didn't you?
Was that all the question? Oh, and the other question I think a lot of people have a hard time with is the role of men and women, that in a marriage, sometimes it seeps out, Ezehi Ishak Shera Osa Ratzin Bala, and the man, I even heard there's a pasuk in Tehillim, you should bow to your master, and that refers to husband and wife. And if you read any Sfarim, or you learn in seminaries, this is right. What you're taught. So how do you tell people to cope with this? And I'd like to hear from both speakers.
I'll talk first so I can take the easy ones.
And it was terrific.
Okay, this is what's called V'ahavta L'Reyacha Kamocha. The reference in Tehillim, starting backwards, because like the Golem in Pirkei Avos, according to, as far as I know, all of the major Meforshim, that particular parak is talking about Mashiach, And the benot malachim there are meant to be hints at the nations of the world. This is the general interpretation of the pasuk, without which you're left with, well, who is this son of the king, and what is he doing? And, you know, it would be very difficult to understand as meaning an actual man with his actual wife. That's with the Perek and Tillim. Now, with what that has to do with Ishik Shera Osar Ratzon Bala and what you learn in seminary, okay? The idea of treating one's husband as a master, and I'll say it like it is, okay, is viewed as appropriate and good. Why? Because men need kavod like women need affection. This is a parallel need. Men, on the other hand, have to give women even more kavod than they give themselves, because their intuitive response to women is to grab the kavod for themselves. But this is a real masculine need, okay? The idea of Osar Ratzon Bala, you've no doubt heard all of the drushes about she makes his will, which I'll spare you. But definitely this, if a person's will, the word will comes from the word ratz, what a person is drawn towards. You have to have a tremendous amount of bina to know what someone's deepest will is. An Ishik Shera is a person who does her husband's truest and most real will, which is often different than his external will. And women are good at this, and men need it, and there's nothing to apologize about it for. Okay. It depends. There are things that are milei d'shmaya and things that are milei d'ara. I mean, if it comes to actual disputation, not everything goes according to what the husband wants. Not that you're supposed to take out your Rambam and open up to Ishus and open up to Kaf Aleph and say, well, this thing. That's not a school of Shalom Bayit. But definitely there's a premise that what goes, that the external world and the internal world have different divisible ends, and different people within the marriage are supposed to give each other some movement and space. You know, Rav Ova has this chaveret for chasanim. You know what I'm talking about? And in this chaveret, he views it as so important nowadays to tell men in words to give women space, that he says, like, if she's doing the floor, notice that she's doing it and don't walk in and track. Why? Not because Rav Ova, even though he is a yekka, thinks that clean floors are that important. But he thinks showing the woman she should have some authority in how things are done, even in something as minor as the floor, is something that a man has to at least think on. He has to let it enter. Now, he also says as an aside that some women are afraid of bugs, so the man should, like, don't tell her, well, if you're such a gibora and you make decisions, go kill the bugs. So the classical yeshiva joke is, what if she sees the bug when she's washing the floor? But anyway, like, yeah. But, definitely it's not accurate to say that on all areas, all decisions should only be made by the man. That's just not true. Okay, taking this back now to the question that you had before, which had to do with men having more than one wife and Moshe's separation from his wife. Okay, notice I'm avoiding the one on get, which I don't have a good answer to. The idea of men having more than one wife was never an ideal in Torah. In other words, there's a difference between permitted and ideal. When you look at, let's say, Sarah and Hagar, the reason why Avram took Hagar was because Sarah wanted him to have a child. This was very unselfish of her, very decent of her. It wasn't Avram prowling around for more women. Okay, there's a big difference there. And even then, it didn't work well. The reason why Yaakov had more than one woman in his life also had to do with things that had to do with the needs of the women he had already had, and the benefit of Klal Yisrael, and again, not womanizing. But nonetheless, even in these permitted circumstances, which generally would turn out to be one marries one woman, she has no children, one doesn't want to divorce her, one still wants children, she also wants children. Even in those circumstances, it was viewed even in ancient times as extremely difficult And today, clearly, it's viewed as a situation that's untenable, which is why Ashkenazi communities have openly forbade it. And in Sephardi communities, it's not acceptable, even though it's not formally forbidden. The idea of Moshe going beyond needing a wife has to do with Moshe's specific function, as opposed to that of all of the other Nevi'im. Okay? His specific function wasn't just to attain a specific kind of Kedusha for himself. It was to attain a level of complete bitul hayesh, complete annihilation of selfhood, so he could be like a translucent mirror that gives forth Torah with no self. Okay? The more he could leave this world, other people, and everything having to do with any kind of self, the better he could do this. But this has to do with his specific purpose in life as one who transmits Torah from Sinai on a one-time basis. So it's not a problem that your husband will encounter. When who separated from his wife? The days before that had to, you mean the 3 days of separation? Again, this had to do with being able to take in something with nothing else going on. Okay, the whole idea of tumah in this relationship. Tumah means, in the end, blockage. So there is a premise, if you're with someone else, there's a part of you that's directed towards them and not towards Hashem. But this is human and appropriate in general. Okay, the idea, finally, this will be the last one that I'll take, then I'll give him all of the bad ones. One's period being a curse. Okay, if you could get past the screaming and yelling and people throwing things at you, and if you can get past that, you could point out to people that there are days that they wake up in the morning in their monthly reality, and they don't feel like singing, "I enjoy being a girl." I mean, this is real, right? Okay, so the fact is the menstrual cycle is biologically inefficient and obviously is a message from Hashem to tell you something about the nature of your body, the finite nature of life, etc. This is different than being dirty or bad. What they hear, even though that's not what you're saying, is that the period is dirty and bad, women are dirty and bad, sexuality is dirty and bad, and men are good. So if you don't want them to hear it, then don't say it. Because they don't have the capacity to hear something else when you use a word like curse.
Okay. I have a lot of questions, but I'll reduce it. I'm over here.
Do you want to do the other two?
Excuse me.
I don't want to, but you want to.
Well, you could avoid it. They're asking something else.
Okay, I can ask you after privately.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. which ones are left? Let me be sure.
I just left you.
You get one. Yeah. Again, as I say, are you talking about the getter or the marriage of marrying two?
No, she's talking about getter.
Yeah, basically, it's connected to this. You know, the Mishnah gives us the grounds for a divorce according to Halacha, and it gives us three opinions. According to Beis Shammai, a man can divorce his wife only for adultery. According to Beis Hillel, even if she burns the soup, and according to Rabbi Akiva, even if he finds somebody who's more attractive. People ask the question, what type of morality would it be to permit a divorce on the grounds that a woman burnt the soup or found somebody more attractive? And the answer that everybody gives is, any husband who wants a divorce for those circumstances, obviously the marriage is something that should terminate. There seems to be a concept, at least psychologically, and this goes to why the man is the one who marries and the woman is the one who receives the Kedushin. And I mentioned before that in Kabbalah, the man represents the active attribute of chesed, of externally acting upon the world, which is what chesed is. The woman is the consolidator, the maintainer, the stabilizing force that roots that action into the inner reality that the parties are faced with. And therefore, there might be some type of concept that a woman is more capable of maintaining and stabilizing a relationship than a man. A woman is capable of keeping a marriage together. A man that is determined to divorce basically has created an unsalvageable situation. He will not be able to extricate himself or repair the breach that has occurred. If a woman is confronted with a difficult marriage, it might be that the Torah envisions that she has the inner capability to repair it rather than destroy it. Now again, I do want to emphasize, when there is a functioning based in that works, as a practical matter, a woman has the same right to get a divorce as a man, and the Beis Din could force the man to give the get. But in terms of the actual one who gives it, it might be, and this is just speculation, I don't really have a clear source, that the woman might be charged with more of a responsibility of attempting to salvage the relationship, while a man who is bent on divorce is basically in an unsalvageable situation. But I'm not sure how satisfactory that'll be. And in terms of Mrs. Booner's point before, I would just say that when I said we live in a gullah society, I wasn't suggesting a cop-out. I was saying that part of our failings are that we haven't learned to properly respond. Mm-hmm. Most communities don't have established what they did. I mean, Baltimore doesn't have a Beis Din. It's an ad hoc thing. You get three rabbis together. And the decisions of Bat Dei Din are universally disregarded and disrespected. And if a Beis Din says something, nobody listens to it anyway. And that's part of our Aveira and part of our Gullus phenomenon.
You get a Beis Din to issue a
You're correct. You're correct. Mm-hmm. And I agree with what you said 100%, that it is really a very serious failing that we should try to address. I wasn't attempting to whitewash anything.
I will say one thing on this. It's true that the Bat Dei Din are very reluctant to give a seiruf. But the more I think about it, the more I think it does have to do with their anticipation that people won't relate to it anyway, which makes it worse. I would say my one experience, I don't work with Gitin the way you do, but my one experience with seeing somebody through various things in the Bet Din was this, that in her particular community, where the Bat Dei Din have forced because of social pressure, this was a Lubavitcher woman, and when the Bet Din there finally issues a seiruv, that day, a copy of the Seiruv goes to every Chabad rabbi in the world and to the Rebbe and to their newspaper. They don't issue a Seiruv every Monday and Thursday, but when it's issued, it's issued. And I don't think large communities have the capacity to put that kind of even social pressure behind a Seiruv, and therefore they're worried about it losing any force whatsoever. It could be I'm wrong. I don't have the experience you do, so...
Mm-hmm. That, in order to get to public demonstrations, mm-hmm. in order to march on a person's store who isn't giving his wife mm-hmm. a get, and so forth, according to halacha, you have to go through
right.
certain aspects of which seiruf is the final one
right.
before you can put a
right.
man's picture in the paper and so forth. I mean, we had a pesach from Reb Moshe Zalat. You're allowed to call out a man's name from the bima to say that he's not giving his wife a get. Who does that?
Uh-huh.
In other words, you're not... There are large areas of these things that can be done if the Bat Dei Din would do their part.
Right here. Let's take another question.
Over here. Thank you. I wanted to thank you both for answering a question I had for a long time, the way Robertson Heller first began by pointing out how there's a seeming dichotomy between saying that women are equal, two halves of a whole, on the other hand saying that actually men have more mitzvos. And I appreciate the classic response, since I've been asking pretty often, and it seems that men usually will tell me how wonderful and absolutely perfect and amazing in the Torah and saying how morally superior they are, whereas women will generally tell me, look, this is the way it is, but it's great to be a woman, so look, enjoy living. Now just be a woman, it's fine. So I appreciate that. But I did have one request of a clarification. You mentioned that it's easier for a woman to pave her a place in Olam Haba because of her access to... I didn't quite understand that.
I'll say it over fast. It says that Hashem made... The promise that Hashem made to women is greater than that to men. Okay, it says this. What promise? The promise for Olam Haba. What's the basis of this? The basis of this is that they're stronger in Emunah, therefore haven't served idols, etc. But this same strength, which has to do with receiving Hashem, is sometimes used for other things, so it isn't a guarantee towards Olam Haba. It's just a promise that if you do, then. It's an if-then promise.
So concludes this, an unedited recording of the Baal Tshuva's Most Challenging Questions, Effective Approaches to Women's Issues session, presented by Rebbetzin Tzipora Heller, a teacher at Neve Yerushalayim in Jerusalem, Israel, and Rabbi Yitzchak Breidowitz, Rabbi of the West Side Synagogue Avas Torah in Silver Spring, Maryland. the session was part of the Association for Jewish Outreach Professionals, AJOPS, second Women in Outreach Conference, which took place at the Parsippany Hotel in Parsippany, New Jersey on November 14 through 16, 1990. The conference brought over 150 women in outreach from over 50 cities and four countries together. 20 seminars enhanced the participants' administrative and programmatic skills. Sessions also gave participants the tools and direction to help them deal effectively with the difficulty of balancing their responsibilities between their home and their kiruv work. The convention was designed to increase each participant's ability to reach more Jews more effectively. The session you just listened to represents the views and opinions of the presenters. For information about AJOP and or other materials and services we provide, please call us at 212-221-2567 or write to us at 500 Fifth Avenue, room 3104, New York, New York, 10110. Thank you.